Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking birthday scotch. Ardmore. Maddie got it for me. It's really nice. Super peaty. Yay, birthday scotch. What are you drinking today?
Well, I was going to say, we're not getting a return of stir-fry beer. I for one, am surprised.
I basically just hid those under my stairs in the cold room, and I'm just going to offer them to guests that I don't like. I'm going to be like, hey, have you tried this beer? You should totally try it. And then I'll find somebody who likes it, and then I'll just be like, you should take all of those. Because those were gross.
It's totally the issue of, it's just like, here, have a beer. Now get the fuck out of my house.
No, I needed something that I knew was going to taste good and that I would be able to enjoy throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Last show, when I was drinking those beers, I drank like half of the first one and I drank maybe like a quarter of the second one. And then I just started drinking water. I was like, fuck this. I'm not going to subject myself to this. It was like
bullshit.
The Bud Light iced tea episode where I was like, no, I'm not going to keep drinking this. I refuse.
Yeah, so, no shit.
Yeah, that's what that came down to. What are you drinking, Nathan?
I am finishing off my growler of the Death by Pumpkin Spiced Ale, and then mm-hmm. I got a couple more of the Yanjing Chinese beers, which is like literally the opposite, because this pumpkin one is like heavy and like pumpkin-y, and those are just like smooth and light. So
fantastic. So you are listening to Jaded Gamercast. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. Nathan, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. After registering for Adepticon and basically getting onto a whole fuckload of wait lists and into one event.
Yay.
Yay, Adepticon. That event being the Horus Heresy tournament. I have been working on my 10-man tactical squad for that tournament, which would be my first 10-man tactical squad, but at least I'm beyond the one model painted, because I'm nearing the other 9 being done. So, almost have all of the white armor, whiteness done on the world leaders, and then next step for that is do all the blue on them. Because like the thing with painting pre-heresy world leaders is you do it in two steps, because you basically assemble the whole Marine, leaving off his backpack and mm-hmm. shoulder pads, because those need to be blue. Then you prime that bitch white and you go to town. So with those left, I have to do eye lenses and then the couple spots of blue on the chainsaw bolter attachments, because they're world leaders, so they all have them.
It's well, clearly
hilarious. But yeah, so like I said, eye lenses, blue, and then you prime the shoulder pads and backpacks in blue and go to town on those before assembling them. So hopefully by this time next week, I will have 10 Marines done.
Fantastic.
Hey, listen, I've got like 5 months. I'm not worried.
Hey, I hear you, man. I'm right there with you. Speaking of Adepticon, let's talk a little bit about our Kickstarter, the Jaded Gamercast Adepticon Double Date. We mm-hmm. did hit our goal with 11 backers total. We have enough. We've booked ourselves for Adepticon. We are planning to go. So thank you to everyone who backed. We have all of our spots for the guest hosts completely sold out. So if you were hoping to get in there too late, you will not be able to get in as a guest host. But we still have spots open for the Let's Plays. If you want to play video games with us, have those videos posted through Jaded Gamercast and generally just enjoy the shit out of yourself so that we can go and just drink a lot on your behalf. We will pour one out for all of the backers, and yes. By pour one out, I mean into Maddie's mouth. That is the goal that I am going for here. But you guys still have 16 days to check that out. Again, if you go to Kickstarter, it's Jaded Gamercast. It's the first thing that comes up if you search Jaded Gamercast. It's not hard to find. We still have T-shirts. We still have glassware, stickers, postcards. So far, we have one guy who got a postcard, and that is going to be the most interesting postcard in the world, because yes. We promised that we would get episode 100 levels of drunk before we did these postcards. Uh-huh. And I am completely excited to just do that one postcard. Yes, like
absolutely. My off goal, the wall. My goal is to get so drunk that I don't remember what I wrote and then have like no one show me because they've mailed it already and be like, all right, I guess this is going to be exciting. But, you know, in fairness, though, if episode 200 was any indication, we'll probably both just draw dicks on it, because that's all we do.
Come on now. But I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to throw these names out here. The heroes who are getting in on that guest mm-hmm. host spot: Jonathan Wong, the Prodigy, the Boreal, We also have Ian McAlder coming out here, Luke Sudgeon, Dr. Duncan James, and Todd. Just one Todd. Name. He's the share when it comes to this show. So you can expect to hear those names on the podcast sometime in the future. We're going to let them pick the time, pick the topic, and we are going to go hard for it. So, yeah, check it out. If you guys have any questions, feel free to just send us a note on Facebook or through the Kickstarter, and we will answer them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we asked you guys is, which do you prefer? Fast and fun games, slow and robust games, or fun is fun, nothing else matters? Surprise, surprise, I threw in a middle-of-the-road, non-committal question, and that is the one that ends up with 73% of the vote. And you know why I put it in there? Because I put it in there just so I could just be like, no, that's bullshit. I don't think that's true at all. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that one was the highest, 73%. At about 20% was slow and robust style games, and only two people felt that fast and furious style games were...
One of which was me. Let me just say this. One of which was me.
One person felt that way as well. And you know what? I think that's funny because, again, I want to talk about two things here. Fun is fun. Nothing else matters is bullshit. We all know that we would play Twilight Imperium if it didn't take 3 days to complete, right? Like, it's
three days to set up. Then you need to start playing. That's right.
Then you need to book a few more vacation days off, hopefully use those time and lieu days, maybe a sick day or two in order to finish that. But, you know, like, it is one of those things where, as much as I feel like fun is fun, there are certain things that you have to make time to do. Mm-hmm. Like, we're enjoying the D&D sessions that we're doing right now, but that is a commitment from a lot of people to spend a full evening trying to, you know, trudge through a D&D session where the players are just killing everyone
who's giving
them the information they need.
It's not really trudging when all we're doing is committing murder.
It's trudging from the DM perspective. Because the whole time I'm like, I don't want to just feed this to you guys. I want you to kind of naturally get to where you're going, considering that this is a canned campaign. But it's one of those things where you kind of get to a point where you're just like, you know, you guys could just knock somebody out, right? Like, you guys know that you could just, like, pin a dude to the ground, you know, but no, it's... And there was that moment where the two fighters went off to fight the Red Brands gang, and there was one left, and he starts to run toward Tresendor Manor, and we're like, whose turn is it? Maddie's. And everyone's like, shit! Because they knew. They knew there was no chance. And even at this point, the group was already sitting there going like, we could question this guy. But Maddie was having none of it.
Yeah.
And then he became the hero of Campton.
Yes. Yes, he did. I have decided that as soon as I level and get my third cantrip slot, it's going to be Druidcraft. And every single time an NPC wants to talk to Maddie alone, I'm just going to make him smell like a skunk.
Fantastic.
And just be like, yeah, fuck him.
I think fun is fun. Only goes so far, but for me, it is slow, robust style games. I love being able to spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours on a game and really feel like I was getting something out of it. Fast and fun games are great. Like, I love Dice Masters, like, literally the fastest, funnest game I have right now. You know, Maddie or John Kingsway will head over to my place and we'll play like 20 games in a night and we'll still be done by 11. because it's fun to be able to do that and kind of switch through that stuff, but at the same time, it just doesn't have the content. Like, it doesn't have that meat.
See,
that you need to really get involved in it.
And what's funny is, for me, I love the fast games. You know, skirmish games, whether it's Strange Aeons, whether it's Bushido. When those fucking werewolf Infinity models got posted, I was like, God damn, do I need to look at Infinity a lot more closely if they have a werewolf faction? Turns out there's like one werewolf dude in a faction, and I was like, no sale. give me a whole faction of werewolves. I mean, no, but I mean, like, for me, it's just like, I love those games like that. However, there are times where I really do appreciate like a good, heavy, robust game like Firestorm, like 40K, what have you. But I find that's kind of the exception, you know, like almost all of my gaming are these fast, fun, you know, board games. It's skirmish games. It's all sorts of things like that, because when push comes to shove, I would rather get in like 2, 3, 4 games in a night than call one for time because it's 1 in the morning and we're not done yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just where I'm at, where it's just why I was one of our two votes for Fast But Furious, because I'm just like, oh, you know what? It's great. It's exactly where I'm at right now from a time perspective and a commitment perspective. But yeah, I totally get it. There is a time where it's just like, you know, I want something chewy, and I want something that's going to take a long ass time to play that has lots of rules to remember, because sure, once in a while, that's fun.
All right. So thanks everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadedgamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. Oh, and there was one comment. Ian said, fun is relative, but I tend to swing both ways. Sometimes I want
to... I would have just full stopped. I'd have just been like, but I tend to swing both ways. All right, thanks.
And we're done. the fast-paced insanity of Dutch Blitz. Don't know what that is, but I've got a partial erection. other times, the slow-paced pandemic is more fun. All depends on the group I'm playing with and how much I've had to drink. Yeah, fair enough. But yes, we will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if you remember. Yada, yada, yada. So... we would normally do a model of the week here, but there weren't any models released for Kane. And if you were lucky enough to get your hands on the Kane book, then, you know, you're probably enjoying it. The people I've talked to who have it, the two of us are not included in that.
Yes.
They seem to be fairly impressed by the fluff and that the rules are pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you only sell five and call that a success, it's very hard for fans like us to get excited about it, and it's like driving a knife into your gamer heart and making it black and turning you into us.
Right, exactly. one of us. No, and I mean, like, that was the thing, is like, for me, I knew that End Times Kane had sold out worldwide off the online store in minutes. Like, we're talking minutes. Like, to me, it feels like they had 500 copies globally. Every store that stocks it, which is more than 500, was earmarked for 0 to 1.
Yep.
And off they went. But no, like I said, it was just like, so it sold out. I knew it was going to be hard to get. So I literally got up early on Saturday morning, release date, and I hit the local Games Workshop, the moment they opened, to discover that, yes, they had received a shipment, but every one of them was a pre-buy. They had none for the shelf, which is bullshit, first of all. Like, what fucking bullshit do you have that the only copies were bought online to ship to the store? Mm-hmm. Like, you got zero for the shelf? Come on. So then I, you know, waited for Imaginary Wars to call. 10 minutes before they opened, I gave a call, and nope, they were short shipped. They didn't even have enough to fulfill their pre-buys. Mm-hmm. Well, that's bullshit. So, being downtown already, went by the Sentry Box. Nothing. They got two in, both were pre-bots. So you're just like, basically, by the moment that everything had opened on Saturday, they were sold out. Yep. So at no point was it possible for anyone to get their hands on this book in the city of Calgary.
Right.
Which is bullshit.
Right. Even the pre-buys in a lot of cases weren't able to get it, or weren't even able to pre-buy, from some of the stories that I heard, where, you know, people were saying like, dude, you can pre-buy if you want, but like, you're not going to get it.
I mean, Warp 3 got zeroed. They were
right, exactly. Zeroed. And they're not going to get those. Those aren't showing up for those guys who pre-buyed. That's it. Like, you're not getting it. It's done. I mean, Games Workshop has said that they are going to be releasing the softback copies, which are, of course, more expensive than they should be for the people who weren't able to get them. But it really is a huge slap in the face for people who have, A, bought the first two books and are either looking to build
myself,
a set, like you.
At my fucking shelf here. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted the third book. I wanted to put it on there. I love the fact that you get the hard, like, the fluff and the rules. Like, I'm waiting for the whole End Time series to be done so I can just read all the fluff from Nagash to Glotkin to Kane. You know, all this stuff. I've been really looking forward to it. And the fact that, like I said, I couldn't even get it pisses me off. Like, you know, it makes me mad, because when we worked for the company, the idea of no one has a chance to get this product is bullshit. Even when they would release the army boxes, something they haven't done for like 8 years, before an army was released, you know, those army boxes were limited, but every store got at least like four.
Right.
Like, everybody.
And if they needed more, they were able to order more. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, it reeks. It reeks of this very desperate end of year attempt by this company to say, you know, like, oh, okay, well, we got a month left. We want to finish the year strong. So we're taking no chances whatsoever. We're just going to put a super low content, like, amount out there.
No, see,
I'm not even going to release the models for it. You know, it.
I mean, with the End Times Kane, yes, I believe that no models is only because of the fact that they probably pushed its release date up based on the success of Nagash and Glotkin.
Mm-hmm.
So they pushed the release date up. The models weren't ready for whatever reason. And, you know, there you have it. But, like I said, it just, to me, what bugs me about it is, like, with this bullshit Games Workshop approach to releases of we're only going to tell you a week out, why wouldn't you look at this and say, let's print more? And beyond this, if you sell out in, like, 30 seconds like you did, why are you going to give me this bullshit soft cover instead of saying, you know what, we're going to reprint the hard covers? I mean, you've released Space Hulk 3 times, you stupid pieces of shit. Why can I not get my hands on a fucking book when you own a publisher?
Right, well...
And you own a publisher and you can't publish books. What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's confusing because it stinks of this kind of veil of exclusivity, right? Yes. Where Games Workshop is trying to say, oh, look, only the real fans got their hands on... Oh, man, this is going to be a collector's item because of this, that, and the other thing. And it doesn't work at all. Like, nobody is looking at this going, shit, man, you just wait, I'm gonna repost this thing on eBay and I'm gonna get $300 for it because somebody really wants it. Like, it these aren't comic books. Any comic books aren't even comic books anymore, but that's a whole other story. I just mean in terms of, like, collective, you know, like, collectability.
Oh, yeah, there's just basically no value in comic books.
Books are completely worthless now. Anything before 1995 or after, I'm sorry, anything after 1995 is worthless. It's
painful. I was going to say before 95 is
no, before 95, there's still stuff out there that's worth some money. Like, I've got some shit back in Arizona packed in boxes that's probably worth some money from, like, way back in the day. But, you know, much of what you typically tend to see, you know, especially since, like, you know, I go to the comic conventions and stuff like that. One of the guys who I work the Imaginary Wars booth with, Jim, loves picking up a lot of old comics. He's not picking up, you know, the 2006, you know, series of Exiles or some shit like this. It's all worthless. Like, you can get your hands on it. It's all digital. Like, nobody really gives a shit anymore. But what Games Workshop is doing here doesn't even have that level of, like, oh, well, you know, comics are just comics because now this industry is so big that we reprint everything so nothing is rare. It's just, hey, we're just not going to print them. Like, we know the demand is there. We absolutely know the demand is there. We know that we could sell 4 times as many. But why are we not doing that?
Yeah. Like, no, you know what it is?
Crazy.
See, you know what it is to me? This is what I suspect it is. A couple years ago, there was a Reddit AMA with a ex-GW upper management person, and he was talking about one of the things that he said was that Games Workshop was working on training their customers and making them price insensitive. And that's what part of that whole, like, everything's going up all the time bullshit was. Yeah, absolutely. It was absolutely the Apple approach. Like, let's develop a customer base that, regardless of cost, will continually purchase our product. Fine, whatever. You can say success or not, because, yeah, there were some people who left over it because it got too expensive, but there were a lot of people that stay despite it. So, great. Success. What I feel like this is starting to do is push those same price-insensitive customers into becoming a pre-order culture. You know, where they are buying at the moment because, look, you missed out on Kane, you missed out on Shield of Ball, and we'll talk about that one in a bit. You know, you missed out on all of these things, so you better pre-order right now. And what pisses me off most about it, you know, is we have this good friend of ours who owns his own store. That entire policy is designed around fucking the retailers, like the independent stockists, out of those sales, because what they're trying to do is train customers who are going to go straight to their website where their markup's 100% because they don't have to pay any fucking people to handle it or turn the lights on or anything. And it takes sales away from the retail branch. It takes sales away from independent stockists, but it gets you buying it immediately. Because that's what this whole weekly, you never know what's coming out next week bullshit was designed for, is I feel it was designed for this push. Like, let's make it so you have literally no heads up, and, oh, you heard about it on Saturday? Well, too late. We sold out Friday night. I guess you better pay more attention. You better be more on the ball if you want it. And that's what this is trying to do, is just force Games Workshop into this bullshit video game purchasing culture.
I was going to say, like, pre-order culture in general is a really interesting thing to talk about. If you tune into The Escapist and you listen to Jim Sterling, he had a 10-minute little episode that he did on pre-order culture that was very interesting. But, you know, he was citing Ubisoft and, like, this new release of a new game that had six different pre-order levels that gave you all of these different things. And they gave
Is it the new Assassin's Creed where you could get all of those things and none of them worked?
I think so. But anyways, like, that pre-order culture is very, divisive in the sense that, like, you see gamers who will pre-order everything, and you now have this subset of gamers who refuse to pre-order anything. They refuse to take part in launch releases unless it's a very, very specific game that they're very excited about, a la Mass Effect 3 or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And the majority of people, they really do refuse to buy into pre-orders because pre-orders are not a guarantee. And you're never walking away from a pre-order going like, oh, I got what I put in. Oh, man, this game, you know, everyone who bought into Titanfall, and Titanfall's essentially dead now, you know, and everybody who bought into Assassin's Creed, and they buy into all these games and they go crazy for these games because pre-order culture is driving it down your throat constantly, telling you like, oh, you need to buy at these levels, you know, give us your money before you can even review it, give us your money before you can even talk about it, because it's zero risk for them. It's even in the worst case scenario, EA and SimCity, right? You remember, like, when we did our first Let's Plays for SimCity, you know, and it was such a fucking catastrophe, but everybody pre-ordered that game through the roof. They had all of the money, all of your money in their pockets at that point. And, you know, you wonder how far are we away from Games Workshop going like, ah, but if you pre-order from our website, you get the cards. Yeah, well, I think that's silly. They're never going to give you anything for free. But, you know, maybe they'll give you a digital edition for free. Who knows? But, you know, it's a very strange model that doesn't match any other industry, you know, the same way that it matches video games. But now we see companies like Games Workshop pushing that so hard. Even Spartan did it, where it was like, oh, you're not going to get this game unless you're pre-ordering. You're definitely not going to get it on time. You're not going to get, you know, as much access to, like, these extra things that we're giving away with the pre-order. Mm-hmm. You have to wait until you can possibly get it in the store. And then once the stores finally have the stock, you have to wait until they get the other stock. I mean, it as a gamer, it's overwhelmingly frustrating because you want to love the things that you love, but you hate the companies that make them fucking much.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, to me, it's just like all of this exclusivity, all of this like, oh, it's sold out, it's gone, is feeding into that. And especially because Games Workshop's not reprinting the hardcover. They're not reprinting any of this. The fact of the matter is that this is exactly what they want. They want people to be pissed off that they missed out, so they'll pre-buy it next time. You know, and it bugs me. It just bugs me so fucking much because, you know, again, call me an old fuck. Call me jaded. Call me all of these things, and they're all true, but it's just like when I got into the game, they had everything always, and there was never an issue. There was never an issue of you can't get something.
Well, they were a retailer. Always
available, and that's exactly it, is they were a retailer. But here, like I said, it feels so dirty, and I hate it. I hate it so much. And I know that I, for one, will not buy into that pre-order culture. So when End Times 4 comes out, if I cannot get a copy on, you know, in the store, I'm just not going to buy it again. Because, like, the other thing is like, you know, here we are. We were looking at it, and this was a point that I wanted to make, where it's just like when Nagash came out and we reviewed it, I was really excited to get back into fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And when Glotkin came out, it was everything I wanted and more. And I was really excited. And I was working on this, and I was so excited that I even told you earlier this week when we were looking at Adepticon registrations, and I was like, shit, I've been waitlisted on all three of the events I tried to get into on Saturday. Fuck it. I'm just going to play fantasy. Because, you know, because I looked at it, there's like 84 slots still available. You got all these End Time books. There's so much stuff to do. And like, I spent the whole week trying to come up with a good Chaos list that I was happy with. Couldn't really get there. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to wait for the Kane book. I'm going to see what I can do. And if I can come up with an Elf list I'm happy with, I'm in whole hog. This bullshit has me so pissed off, I don't even want to play fantasy anymore. Like, all of that goodwill, all of that momentum that this series had garnered with me is gone now. Because well, I can't get my hand on this book.
That's the thing. It's not just you. It's not just the two jaded bastards on this particular podcast. It's everybody. Like, there's nobody. I've yet to hear a single person go, you know, but hey, that's my fault, man. I should have been blah, blah, blah. Every single person who wanted this book and didn't get it was pissed off. And it, like I said, it wasn't an issue of like, oh, it was an exclusive. And, oh man, I should really subscribe to that newsletter so I can get that early, you know, that early notice. We're tied into this. Like, we know as soon as anything gets posted and, you know, we're such a savvy consumer base for the most part, in the sense that we know how to compare prices and we know, I mean, ask your typical Space Marine player. They can tell you how much a box of 10 tactical Marines cost over the last 10 years. Well, you know, this iteration was this much and this way. Like, we know exactly how much this stuff is, and we accept it. So when this kind of thing happens, yes, it's hypocritical to a point, and I'm fully aware of that. And I fully accept the fact that we sit there and say, it's too fucking expensive. It's too fucking expensive. And as soon as we can't buy it, we're bitching about the fact that we can't buy it. That's an abusive relationship, and we know we're on step 3 of the 12 steps. But anyway,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's one of those things.
I acknowledge there is a problem, but I just don't see it as a problem.
That's like I said, man, I can't just quit. but that's what it really comes down to. It comes down to this whole idea that, listen, if you're going to play ball this way, you know, don't bunt it, right? Like, no, you don't go out to a hockey game and watch your favorite team just skate around and dribble the puck and run the clock down. Nobody wants that. They want another score.
Rexall sells out a lot. Wait, what?
It's just because we've kind of get. I think Edmontonians. I'm going to tangent here. I think Edmontonians look at the Oilers like their son's hockey team. I don't care if we lost every game this season. I'm still going to watch every game. I'm going to every game. I'm going to cheer them on. And when and if they win, I am so excited.
Good for you.
I don't think anybody actually expects that team to do anything. So when something happens, we're like, fuck yeah. But, you know, I'm not saying that's it. Like I said, we're parents who love them regardless. That's all it really comes down to with Edmonton. So,
yes.
I mean, this is something that is very easy to get angry about because of the fact that, like, also we run a podcast and, you know, it wasn't just Games Workshop. Spartan still hasn't released the army sheets for the PDFs for Planetfall yet. So as much as we wanted this episode to be Planetfall, where we could actually talk about each of the different armies, how they're different, really break that down for you guys, we can't do that. We have nothing to talk about. We've reviewed the book. We've played the starter set. And that's it. There is literally nothing else to talk about until we've been given something new. So, okay, we've got Kane to fall back on. We know that the End Times has been rolling good. It's provided us with a lot of content. It's got us excited about things that we want to talk about and that you guys want to hear us talk about, I assume. But we have nothing. There's nothing to talk about because everybody sat there holding the cards as close to their chest as possible, and then they show a 2, you know? Like, it's really, really annoying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and yeah, it really is. And I mean, if there are really limited quantities and Games Workshop expected this, the least they could have done is just been like, listen, we can't guarantee anything. This run is weird. We're going to have a new one. It'll be out
in January. There was a problem in the printing press.
Yeah, something. But, like, don't just give me this bullshit. Because even when we move beyond End Times and we look at the new Shield of Ball stuff, you know, so this is basically the new Stormclaw, right? Because we got new Tyranid stuff. Mm-hmm. We got new Blood Angels. Blood Angels are coming out. Limited edition starter set. That is all existing models except for 2 new characters. Yep. And
this is what, the second or third time we've seen something like this?
This is the second, because the first time. One was the Stormclaw box, which, you know, Space Wolves and Orcs being the 2 newish armies that were out. Now we're getting Blood Angels and Tyranids, because we had a lot of Tyranid releases. We know Blood Angels come out, I think, next week, or no, not next week, would be the week after. You know, so we have all of this, and this was another one of those, oh, sold out, sorry, too bad, so sad. And it was both the campaign book that has all of these new data slates and rules for Tyranids,
mm-hmm.
You know, so all of the new shit that's been coming out in the White Dwarf, in addition to new Warlord trait, basically High
Fleet. All the models we've been talking about.
All the models we've been talking about, formations, all of that jazz, only available in that book, fucking sold out. If you're a Tyranid player and you couldn't get your hands on it, too bad, so sad. You're an idiot and you're done. And then they released the Shield of Baal Deathstorm box, which for the first thing I wanted to talk about it was how fucking awful its contents were.
Like, it is so thin.
It is so thin, and even though it's super, super thin, I would also like to make a claim that this is the most one-sided box set since the third edition Space Marines Dark Eldar set. Like, if you got the Tyranid half of this set, I hope you love losing games,
because oh my God.
All you're going to do.
Good luck eating that dick, because, I mean, it is a horrible, horrible box set in the sense that, yeah, it just does not work. It's not something that would be fun to play out of the box.
No.
And it's this minimalist thing that we're seeing over and over again.
Hey, you know, the best thing going for a Horde army is when they are outnumbered by the non-Horde army. Go to town.
So even when it came to Kane, you know, one of the things that Nathan and I were talking about earlier today, we were texting back and forth, and I said, okay, well, you know what? I'm just going to go buy the digital edition. You know, I'm just going to go get my hands on it. It is only available through the iBook store. And I'm just like, no, fuck that. I don't want to install iBooks. Like, why can't you just sell me the fucking EPUB like you did with the Dark Eldar Codex? Like, why can't you just make this available in like the simplest way possible to the people who actually will be using it? It
especially when they're ripping us off, charging $70 for a digital fucking book. Okay, like,
oh, but Nathan, it's the interactive edition. Didn't you know? Didn't you know it's the interactive edition, Nathan? Because it has 360 views built into it.
Oh shit, is that for all of the new models they released? Oh, wait.
Yep.
Wait.
For all the new models they released.
Got it.
360 views. Oh my God. Like this.
No, but I mean, like, that's the thing where it's just like, so first of all, you are ripping us off harder than you've ever ripped us off on a codex before. On a digital edition. Because I mean, like, a codex hardcover is going to run you $60. And then $35 for the digital edition, which, you know, yeah, it's more than 50%, but at least at $35, I'm looking at it and going, yeah, I'm not being ripped off. But $70? Really?
Yeah, $60 from what I'm looking at.
Oh, okay.
$60, still. It, fuck that. No, it...
For sure.
Okay, I'm going to breathe that out a little bit.
Just everything about Games Workshop over the last 2 weeks... Actually, you know, let's go. Last 3 weeks has been a fucking joke, okay? Their Christmas products are bullshit, and we covered that at length. How stupid and idiotic and bullshit they were. Then we've got this End Times Kane fiasco. We've got this Shield of Baal fiasco, where it's just like, you know, it's just, it's bullshit. How are you running such limited editions? And it's so transparent because they're trying so desperately to just create this pre-order culture that's going to flock to their fucking website and throw in their credit card every Friday because, God forbid, it sell out. I hate it because it's so transparent. And I hate it even more because it's totally going to work. Like that, and I think that's the worst part is just like... You know, people aren't going to look at this and say, fuck it, I'm done with this company. I refuse to buy into this bullshit. I'm not going to do it. It's going to work.
I mean, people will, but not to the extent that would ever affect their bottom line, considering the business model that they've now adopted. And it is one of those situations where us as gamers, like, I'm probably selling most of my Warhammer armies coming up soon here. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to touch Warhammer for a while. And as much as I was enjoying End Times and I really wanted to see where all these different books go and see if that's going to light that fire for me, like, yeah, this totally kills it. And is that short-sighted? Yes. And is it a gut reaction? Yes. But still, as a company, you have to manage that within your customer base. If you don't understand your customer base to a point where you know that they're going to want to buy these based on the sales of the first two books, if you know for a fact that these things are going to sell based on the numbers that you have, and then you just decide that, no, you know what? We are not even going to provide that level of supply to this campaign that we're building, that people are buying into, that people want, and this is one of the best things they could have done in a long time. And your decision is just, ah, fuck them. You know, like, you've turned into, you know, oh, I can't remember what the fucking copy store name was.
Popular Copy?
Pop Copy. You've turned into Pop Copy. Why treat the customers this way? Because fuck them, that's why. And that is all I get out of that, and that's all I care about at this point. So as far as I'm concerned, like, I've been on a thread for a long time, but why would I ever even glance in this direction and play these games anymore? I mean, you saw, like, Evil Ed recently. We were sad to see him go from his This Week in 40K podcasting. For anybody who doesn't know, he did his last post last week and basically said, he's just like, I have no love for the game. I don't want to play it anymore. I don't like what the company does. I don't like how the rules are designed now. I don't like how they sell things. I just don't want it. He's like, I want to focus on X-Wing. I want to focus on all these other games because this company is completely disillusioned. I mean, this is a guy who eat, breathe, and sleep this game. I mean, he had to have listened to like 12 hours of 40K podcasts a week.
Yeah.
Easily. Our podcast, even though it's weekly, is relatively short compared to some of these long, 4-hour podcasts, right? But like, look at him. Like, look at him as the example, where a guy like that who got into it, loved it, and has been doing it for years is just like, fuck this shit. I don't even care to listen to this garbage anymore. That's insane.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. And I mean, I do feel like this is... Yeah, I feel like they are going to lose some people because, like, I, for one, I'm not going to sell everything, but, like, even fantasy, I'm done. Like, I feel like with all this end time stuff, I could happily sell my demons and my wood elves. I'll have no fantasy armies, and I won't even be upset. Uh-uh. You know, I really won't. And with 40K, really, I mean, I'm doing Horus Heresy because I feel like Forge World at least has their shit together. And it's so funny how Games Workshop can have these other divisions of itself that can do things so well while they just fuck it up over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, like, how is it possible? I don't know.
Well, in the competition, you have to think the competition is bleeding them dry. You know, we've talked about in the past how they're the biggest and the baddest gorilla in the room. And, you know, you have to respect that and you have to play around it. But you see so many companies now that just, they don't even care. They don't even try to copy what's there because the resources and the tools that they need in order to do their own games and do them well and have them sell really well. Like, a small company like Spartan is just like blowing out their stock. And it's not an issue of they didn't print enough because they were trying to create exclusivity. It was an issue of like, holy shit, we did not print enough. And then they printed more.
Yeah, they literally said, we're going to push it all back a week so we can print enough to fulfill all of our pre-orders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, take a fucking lesson from that, Games Workshop. Like, take a lesson from your direct competitors who are doing it right. Because, I mean, realistically, what they're doing would be like if Apple only created 1 million iPhone 6s, and if you didn't buy it, hope, better luck on the 7.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Like, we're not going to make another phone. That's it. Well,
it's not even like better luck on the 7. If you didn't get a 6, they're like, but the 5S is here. You know what I mean? Right. Like, where they're just like, you know, we are releasing a softback if you kind of really wanted it. And that is a
reason. Yeah, like, that's a good point.
It's so ridiculous. It's so insane. It's not just wait for the next one. It's just, yeah, fuck them. They missed it. You didn't pre-order it. We've got all the dollars in our pockets. All right, so there really isn't much more to say about this, guys. Unfortunately, this is Gripe Fest 2014 as we head into the new year.
We are upset and hopefully
bullshit. You know, I mean, I have friends who bullshit. Still work for Games Workshop, and I don't sugarcoat it when I talk to them. Right, you know, John Kingsway is a great friend of mine. Love a guy to death, and it's just like, we'll talk about Games Workshop, and I'm just like, I fucking hate Games Workshop, and he's just like, he defends them, but he kind of begrudgingly is like, yeah, this is really bad. And yeah, this pisses me off because they constantly do this crap. But like, even the guy on the front lines who is actually dealing with this stuff is sitting there going like, God damn, I can't, like, I just can't swallow the garbage anymore. And you can't just toe the company line.
Yeah.
But when you talk to people who are looking to get into Planetfall, or they're looking to get into Firestorm, or they're looking to get into all these other different games, everyone's just like, fuck yeah, let's do this. You look at WizKids piling the models out, churning out these games. Fuck rules. Like, it just, yeah, this new ship breaks the game. Fuck it, whatever. Next ship will break it even more. You know, like, but everybody buys it. Everybody likes it. We're still enjoying Star Trek Attack Wing. Everyone's still enjoying all this other stuff. D&D Attack Wing is starting to take off. Like, Dice Masters is going for it. And even Dice Masters is one of those things where the first run was so unbelievably successful that they just couldn't stock it. And they'd already begun working on the next release. So they were like, you know what? We're not making more of this stuff. We're going to have another release. When that release comes out, we guarantee stock. And you can get stock. Like, there's no shortage of, like, Uncanny X-Men for Marvel Dice Masters, because they knew, they looked at the numbers and they were like, right, let's make sure this shit is stocked. And from the perspective of a gamer, why should I have to fight to get things that I, as a consumer, even, not even a gamer, as a consumer, why should I have to fight to get the things I want? Every day is not Black Friday, Games Workshop.
Yes. Well, and especially, again, like, you know, I'm married, I have a kid, I have house payment, you know, I've got a mortgage, I got car payments, I have all of these things. So for me, most hobby purchases are built around payday.
Right.
Period. End of discussion, where it's just like, look, I was looking at this, we worked it out, I can get it on the 15th, because the 30th is like big payday, where it's just like, yeah, all the bills come out first of the month, what can we say? So you're just like, even if I was in whole hog, I am not in a position to be able to play Games Workshop's bullshit games. And the fact that I'm not in it whole hog is when you're just like, so who are they hoping to get? Because, like, fucking university students, college students don't have the money for them to be able to just dump it. You know, like, they're not going to be able to just be like, yeah, all right, so it came out, I bought it, what's the big deal? And Mary people, so, like, are they really just like, hey, listen, we are going to own the 23 to 25 single market. Like, fucking own it. And you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, I just don't get it. And it bugs me, because you're right. As a gamer, you know, and a collector, because that's what these hobbies are. You collect.
You compulsively, like, you wanted the books, like, you wanted them on your shelf. Whereas I'm just like, fuck this shelf. Like, I'm angry at the stack of codexes and army books that I have over here. Like, it irks me every time I look at it. I had a buddy over and he was like, wow, you actually bought that, all that, you bought all those army books. And I was like, yeah, bought them for the show. And he's just like, you guys are troopers, man. He's like, that's a lot of money. I was like, dude, go count up how many books I have there at $60 to $70 a book, plus the $100 rule books and all that kind of stuff that go with it. Like, that's almost $2,000 worth of books right there from the past, like,
3 years podcast. And I have a stack.
You have way more than I do.
Well, yeah, because there are ones where I'm just like, I bought the Space Marine book, collector's edition. And then when Clan Raucon was released, I bought collector's edition for that as well. So when I actually go to play 40K, at least in 6th edition, when I did have the collector's edition rulebook as well, but when 7th came out, I said, fuck it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to spend $250 on a rulebook every year and a half. Fuck you. But it was just like, I had the $250 rulebook along with $220 worth of codexes. So I'm just like, I got like $500 worth of books right here to play my game. So yeah, it's just like, I love books. I love them to death, which is why I was really wanted that Kane book. And I got up, I got my fucking kid dressed. We went out in, thankfully it wasn't blizzarding anymore, but -30 degree weather, just to go to the store and run around the city in the hopes of getting my hands on the book.
Yeah. Well, the only person that I knew in Edmonton who even got one was from the Hobby Night in Canada podcast. I don't know who it was. I think it was Dan. But he had somebody at a store put one aside. Like, it wasn't even a pre-order. It was just, if you get an extra one, can you please save it for the, like, it was a little deal that they had in the background, like a little under the counter type deal to get his book. Otherwise, he would have not gotten his book.
And what's crazy is there wasn't even anything available for that in the city of Calgary. Because, like, again, I'm good friends with a store owner. He is super good about me just shooting him Facebook messages where it's like, can you just put this on hold for me and I'll pick it all up on Tuesday when I'm there? And I'll be like, yeah, sure. What do you need? And he'll do it. And he'll do it even if it's the last copy of something. And he will hold on to that, you know, for me. He didn't get enough for his pre-buys. So what the fuck am I supposed to do in that position where it's just
And he's also not the kind of guy who's going to fuck over a pre-buy.
No, just because absolutely
we're
not.
J-list friends of his.
Yeah, absolutely not. He's not an asshole. So, right. You know, there's that.
Yeah, it really, 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 really is frustrating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this brings us to the weekly listener poll question. Then we're going to do a little something shiny here.
Cool.
So weekly listener poll question that we have for you guys is, does this shatter your faith in Games Workshop? I know where my vote is. I know where mm-hmm. Nathan's vote is. Because honestly, it really, really frustrates me. And I don't want to be the guy who says I'm done and then instantly jumps into it again because I do a podcast that I have to deal with these things. Literally, if I didn't do a podcast, I would never touch this stuff ever again.
Oh, yeah.
Especially Games Workshop, right?
If we did not have the podcast, I can honestly say that I would not have picked up 7th edition 40K. And yeah, like it just, there are so many things that would not happen. Like I probably wouldn't even have an Iron Hands army if not for the podcast, because I'd have never bought the Marine book.
Well, and I'll tell you this right now, the last three reviews for Games Workshop related products that we did, which was Dark Yaldar, Nagash, and Glotkin, I did not buy those books. I borrowed those books in order to do the review because I'm just like, I'm not putting money in this garbage anymore. Like, I do not want to do that. Is it interesting to me still? Yes. Don't act like I'm saying I'm done mm-hmm. altogether, because A, I still love the universe, and B, it is still really interesting to me. I love reading the books. I love going through them. I love bitching about them more than anything. But, you know, it just, they've gotten to the point now where I go to this website like it's crack.com and I fucking laugh at everything I see, and I sit there and shake my head and I just go like, this is so fucking stupid. It's entertainment and it's like reading, you know, it's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't go here to shop.
No.
At all. I go here to go, oh, are you fucking shitting me? Like, every single time it comes out. And I'm not saying the company can do no good. They still do good things, but it's like, I don't want to put anything into this thing.
You know, I've said it time and time again, and we see it when we do Models of the Week a lot. Mm. Games Workshop's models are the best in the business, and you can never take that away from them. I just wish that whomever was in charge of their overall business strategy had half a fucking clue what they were doing. Because right now, all they're doing is alienating their customers. And after they close out a fiscal year where they have a 40% drop in sales, how is alienating customers the key to making up that gap? Like that's the thing, is I'm just like, it's business 101. If you're alienating customers and sales are down, what do you try to do? Well, you try to be accommodating and you maybe lower your prices to attract more customers, to attract, you know, disenfranchised customers back to the fold. You do these things. You don't fucking screw them out of sales. You don't frustrate them. You don't disenfranchise them. Like, you know, we saw a 40% drop on the last fiscal year end. I can't wait to see the next one because I don't think it'll be that big again, but you're probably going to see a drop. Mm-hmm. And when you see a drop from the previous year's numbers, which were fucking awful compared to 2 years ago, like, what is that saying about the company other than the fact that they are destroying their own relevancy?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's just like, I've been saying it for a while. They're going to be BlackBerry. They are making every wrong business decision. Meanwhile, their competitors are doing everything right.
Well, that's absolutely it. So, again, for those of you who missed it, the weekly listener poll question is, does this shatter your faith in Games Workshop? I'm going to put another option up there that there'll be yes, there'll be no, and there will be the option that says Games Who? Because I know a lot of people have already completely ditched Games Workshop altogether for the exact reasons that we're talking about.
And that's the thing for me, is I was just like, no, it doesn't shatter my image of Games Workshop because they're already so far down that nothing they do surprises me anymore. Right. Like, you know, so that Games Who, yeah, that's mine.
All right. So, hey, Nathan, something shiny. We saw The Hunger Games last weekend. And we kind of talked about it back and forth a little bit, and then you sent me a message where you're like, well, it's 66 on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, it's about right. I thought the movie was fucking terrible. I ended up going to back to work, and there were a bunch of other fans of Hunger Games there going like, oh, did you see it? I liked it. It was great.
Oh,
and
of course,
I instantly like dive into like how they're wrong about everything, as I typically do when somebody says something like where I'll just start pointing out all the fucking terrible things that happened in the movie.
Yeah.
And even you, as soon as the movie was done, you're just like, I was better than the book, and the book was shit. And I was like, right, I guess that's kind of a good thing.
Well, like, yeah.
But I hated it, man. Like, it was fucking awful. And the more I think about it, the more I'm just like, I'm trying to think of like one moment in that movie that I genuinely enjoyed. And it was, well, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it was near the end.
Anything with Woody Harrelson on there, because he, even in this, steals every scene he's in.
All he did was highlight how bad the movie was, which is why I can't look back to that. It was at the end. It was the one of the end sequence pieces. It was the bit where you were just like, they should have just cut to black there.
Yes.
That was my favorite part of the movie, because it was the most satisfying part of the movie, because I hated the main character. I hated Katniss so much. And I hated every character so much by the end of that movie.
And again, like for me, I'm not defending it because, you know, first of all, splitting it was unnecessary, okay? The book Mockingjay is not longer than Hunger Games. It is not longer than Catching Fire. Right. How is it you were able to create faithful adaptations of these two, which were both great, great, amazing films? And then you're just like, and now we've got to cut Mockingjay in two, man, because there's just so much there. And by so much there, I mean, sweet, don't let this Hunger Game gravy train end. That's really all it is. It's a total cash grab where they got to stretch that franchise out, because again, the book is not longer. The film is better than the book, in my opinion. I know that our friend Gemma loves Mockingjay. It's her favorite. I can't figure out why.
I said to Gemma, she doesn't know anything about writing. I love Gemma. Anyways, she doesn't listen to the show, so it's okay.
Oh, absolutely. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing. So it's just like, I'm not defending it, because the movie was slow. It was dry. There were no likable characters. There was no action to drive the film. Like, basically, you know, it was the Matrix Reloaded of fucking franchise films, where it's just like, all we're doing is setting up the next film. But why didn't you do something in this one? Because we're setting up the last one, and it's going to be awesome.
Right. Well, again, like that franchise mentality is such a huge part of the movie industry now, that like a lot of people, especially a lot of producers, they don't want to get involved in something that isn't a franchise, because that franchise money is so sweet. You know, and even like, look at The Hobbit, right? Like the first Hobbit I enjoyed, but it wasn't great.
Yes.
Second Hobbit was better, but I enjoyed it less. And
really? You thought it was better?
I thought it had better pacing, and I thought that the characters were more believable, but it was less enjoyable, because it was still just this hacky, let's just wash the laundry a couple more times, get those whites whitest until we actually gonna, you know, throw the big one at you. And two movies, sure. Three movies, no. It doesn't work for me. And I'm not going to see the next Hobbit, because I just don't give a shit. And when you look at a lot of franchises, you know, and this all really came about because of like Harry Potter and how Marvel's running their whole continuity thing. And now everything has to be a franchise, and everything has to be Twilight, and everything has to be Harry Potter, and everything has to be Marvel movies, because of the fact that these things are successful. And we all know that Hollywood doesn't learn anything. They just repeat what's successful until it's no longer successful, and then they look at the new thing that's
successful.
You mean
like comic book movies? Like, have you seen the slate between Marvel and DC over the next like 5 years?
Absolutely.
Like, we are going to hit comic book point, like we're going to hit that critical mass, and people are just going to stop fucking caring, because it's just like, we don't need 11 comic book movies a year.
Well, I've said it before, you know, when it comes to Marvel, I love Marvel films, and as far as I'm concerned, none of them have failed. And the box office says none of them have failed, and I've enjoyed all of them. Even the ones that I would say I would rate near the bottom are still pretty decent movies. And Even I sit there and I go, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy was the riskiest sure bet in Hollywood, in the sense that, like, everyone goes like, oh, this thing could totally bomb. But anyone who knew anything was like, no, this is going to be fucking amazing. And no company is that talented or lucky that mm-hmm. they could keep that stretch going for that long. And so now it's like every time a Marvel film comes out, everybody's just sitting there going like, is this going to be the one? Is this going to be the Green Lantern? Is this mm-hmm. going to be Daredevil? Like, you know, we now know that we've got the television series, which is very enjoyable that I like. And we have all of these movies, and then we're going to get four separate Netflix original series for Marvel. You know, like, this whole continuity is going to keep tying together, and they're working so hard on it, but it is going to it will flop. Eventually, this whole thing is going to fall apart, and they're going to scramble to put the pieces back together, because Marvel Studios is not going to start making remakes of Romeo and Juliet. They're just going to keep making superhero films because that's their jam. Yep. So you wonder when that bus runs out of gas, what does that company do with themselves?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the other thing I was going to say, did you watch the, or I should ask, how many times did you watch the Star Wars trailer?
3 times, and then someone made a phenomenal Episode 7 George Lucas Special Edition.
That was dumb.
Oh my God.
It had Spaceballs in it.
Okay, yes, George Lucas did. But the fact that there was just like all of that bullshit CGI everywhere and it was unnecessary, I was just like, yeah, 100%. That is George Lucas.
That's movies now. That's just... See, but that's why I enjoy that argument so much about the lightsaber. Oh, God, I've gotten so much enjoyment out of the lightsaber arguments. Because there's the camp that is just like, it's fucking awesome, yeah.
I'm in the camp of, I don't give a shit, just give me a new Star Wars
movie. Oh, I'm in the camp that it's awesome, but I love hearing people complain about how the design doesn't make sense and how it's just, they're just trying to give you the same reaction to like Darth Maul's double-bladed lightsaber, because everyone bitched about the double-bladed lightsaber too when it first came out, because they were like, you'd cut your own fucking shit off, you know, all day every day. And I love it so much, just listening to the people the who bitch and complain.
But yes, I love it. It is fun. Yes, the internet is definitely just like, this is bullshit, it is stupid, and your hand will get cut off, and it's stupid.
It's dumb, and then the other people are like, no, it solved a primary issue with lightsabers. If you're fighting a guy, and your blades touch, and he just slides his blade down your blade and cuts your fingers off, you fucking die. He's like, now there's a hilt there, and the hilt will stop yada yada from happening, and I'm just like, it doesn't matter. Like, why am I the only one sitting here going, it doesn't matter? Because I'm just like, but it's cool. That's all I care about. Like, yeah, this is a mindless movie. Why are you breaking it down? But I know why they're breaking it down, and oh, I love it so much. It's so enjoyable to have them. And I love the people who bitched where they were just like, it's a bad trailer. That movie looks dumb. It's like, trailer doesn't tell you anything. It just shows a black stormtrooper, it shows a chick on a speeder.
It is the perfect teaser. And I've talked about it because I'm just like, what does it do? Is it introduces the three new primary cast members. It just gives you that quick little blip, blip, blip of who are the three new people. And that's great. So you get to see them. It shows you the environments. It shows you some fucking amazing special effects, because I'll be the first to tell you that watching the X-Wings race through the water, I was just like,
dude. The hairs on my arm stood up. I was just like, oh shit.
That's amazing.
It got like, I got so excited when I saw that bit. Like just the whole idea where they're just like, oh yeah, these things can fucking fly in atmosphere. Like just all of that stuff where you're actually not seeing anything in space. What you're seeing is all of these ships flying in atmosphere.
Yes, because even the Falcons.
Yeah, even the Falcon and the TIE fighters are flying in atmosphere, and you actually get to see them dogfighting and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh, well, a little bit, but.
But no, like I said, it's the perfect teaser, because it's showing you all of this. It gives you a quick glimpse, because realistically, that villain bit of him walking and then the lightsaber is 4 seconds.
Yeah.
You get a glimpse of the villain. You get basically one sentence of exposition about how something awakens. So you're just like, oh, is this like an old Sith?
Cumberbatch.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
He's got to be in everything.
Well, we know JJ goes back to the well when it comes to actors and characters and stuff like that, which I love. Because that's like Joss Whedon, right? I'm just like, yeah, hell yeah. Go back to the
fuck yeah.
What are the people you love, right?
I don't give a shit about that. So right. I love it. But like that's the thing where you're just like, it's the perfect teaser because it gives nothing away with the plot. Like, this isn't fucking like the Looper trailer where you're just like, I know exactly what
everything happens. Everything that will happen.
I know this film start to finish because of this trailer. I know everything that's going to happen.
We also know that in the next year, there will be 9 more trailers, about 25 featurettes.
Yes.
You know, like very much like Days of Future Past or like Avengers and stuff like that.
Well, and that's the thing is like for me,
like you will be saturated with it.
Oh, yes. I know that because that is new Hollywood. That is what Hollywood does. But like for me, I saw the trailer. I loved it. I'm now going to intentionally avoid as much of like the lead up as possible because I want to be able to go into this movie not knowing what's going to happen.
Well, yes. And I think that like there was that whole big leak of all the pictures.
Even when you look at Star Trek Into Darkness, where it's just like, we all knew it was Wrath of Khan before we went in there.
Didn't know it was Wrath of Khan. We just knew he was Khan.
Yes, we knew he was Khan. Did it make the movie less enjoyable? No. But for me, this is Star Wars. I've seen Star Wars tattoos. I live the Star Wars lifestyle.
Same here.
I want to go in knowing nothing and just enjoy it for what it is.
Well, exactly. And I think it's funny because, you know, even with Into Darkness, where you're just like, yeah, of course he's Khan. We all know he's Khan. None of the trailers, nothing says he's Khan, but we all know he's Khan. Everybody knows he's Khan. He's Khan, right? Yeah, he's Khan. And then you get in the movie and they're like, John Harrison. And you're like, wait, what the fuck? And you spend like the first hour of the movie thinking it's some guy named John Harrison. And they don't ever reference the eugenics wars and they don't ever reference anything until eventually he talks about it. And then you get to hear more about it. And you're just like, oh shit. Like, yeah, J.J. Abrams is just like, oh no, his name's John Harrison. Why'd you guys think he was Khan? And then even in the same movie, he's like, yeah, he's Khan. You know, a little overdramatic moment there that he was trying to build. I'll admit that. But still, it's a good twist, right? And we were able to walk away from it going like, ah, you know what? I'm happy with that movie.
For sure.
But yeah, like I said, I think my favorite thing about the Star Wars trailer is just the arguments like that instantly happen. Just like, that's not canon. Like in the EU, you would never, but and like all of those things just go and go.
Yeah, but none of the EU is canon anymore.
Well, I know the EU.
Disney declared that.
I know the EU is not canon. I'm perfectly fine with that. I read almost all of the EU up until the end of the Yuuzhan Vong War before it got like apparently fucking ridiculous, even though it was fucking ridiculous for a long time.
Yeah.
But like,
I read all those books. I pretty much read all of the EU until Attack of the Clones came out. And then after that, I was like, nah, you know what? I'm done. I'm just done with Star Wars. Thanks, George Lucas.
Right. No, you know, it's like I said, it's J.J. Abrams. The guy is a fan. And somebody said to me, they're just like, it looks like a fan film. I'm like, yes, exactly. That's why it's going to be so good because it's going to be a fan film. If anything, J.J. Abrams has shown us that he is able to mimic directing styles of famous directors. Like when he made Super 8, I don't care what you say about that movie, good or bad. That movie felt like Goonies. Like
I described it to Terry. I was like, you need to see it. It's like E.T. meets the Goonies. She's right, like, exactly. I've never seen the Goonies. I'm like, go to hell. Like, what the fuck?
I almost just cut you just now. yes, exactly. But like the guy knows how to mimic those directorial styles and he knows how to make those types of things the way that fans would want those types of things to be made. And even when we see the shots from this where, you know, she goes and she jumps on the speeder bike and you're expecting the super sleek speeder bike and the thing looks like a fucking lawnmower, you know, like she's riding a John Deere. I was just like, yes. Perfect. Thank you. Like he's going back to the cardinal sin, as far as I'm concerned with the prequels, is that the prequels were clean. Everything in the prequels was clean. When in the original movie, everything was dirty and the two never ever meshed. And even when they went back to Tatooine, everything was clean, and they go to all these different places. Everything is spotless.
Well, the technology was newer and flashier and more advanced. And you're like, but why? But, you know, it does look like a return to Star Wars. My one hope, and this is a cinematography hope, I have accepted lens flares into the new Star Trek universe, but I hope they stay there because I feel like the lens flare is too clean.
He has said that the lens flare is specific to
Star Trek.
Like he's basically said that like he likes Star Wars because it's dirty. And Star Trek is always
clean. Awesome.
And
no, and that's
reason
exactly
why he threw the lens flares in. Everything is supposed to be shiny and bright and like super, super, like just everything is lit and everything is glowing and everything is blinking. And then when the movie gets really dark and like things start blowing up, there are no lens flares. Like he plays this very simple cinematic trick on you in the first movie, and then he does it again in the second movie before completely killing it, and it works, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
In these, well, and he said, like, oh, you're not going to see there's no lens flares in this movie. Like, that's
a Star Wars thing. Well, and that's exactly it, and that's what I was hoping for, because, again, I'm sure, you know, we're in stealth mode now. Like, let's just wait out the next 13 months, and we'll
let's
try
just
not to
go on the internet ever again.
Yeah, basically. No, but, like, that's the thing, is it's just, like, you know, I have come to accept and kind of appreciate the lens flares in Star Trek, because you're right.
Oh,
it
I
is
never
always
hated
those. It is always that super clean, you know, things where it's just like you're only getting lens flares when they're on the fucking bridge at the beginning and you're doing the hero pans and everything is sparkly and shiny and all of that. But that's the thing, is I'm like, there's nothing sparkly or shiny about Star Wars. So the fact that he's said that makes me happy.
Well, I'm paraphrasing. I can't quote directly where he said it, but I believe that was something that I did read in an interview with him. But yeah, it's, I don't know. We are all cautiously optimistic together, people. So let's remain that way. Let's go back to the movie Fanboys and let's just enjoy ourselves.
Yes. Oh my God. I think I'll go watch.
Watch Fanboys again. Right. Like that is exactly how I feel about this. So I'm super excited for it, but hey, that has been Jaded. Right. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.